National Gallery Podcast.
Hello, I'm Miranda Hinckley and this is the National Gallery Podcast. Coming up this month, Italian painters experiment with radical art and politics in a major new exhibition opening this month. Channel 4 newsreader John Snow makes his vote count as a National Gallery trustee. And,
as in Holbein's version, the objects really sort of tell the story. So it's all the topics they were talking about. So we have a NATO helmet, a sort of flask of rather dodgy-looking nuclear material glowing rather dangerously, and the nude photo of Carla, which was on auction in New York at the time. And on it on the corners, there's Sarkozy's hung his aviator sunglasses and his big bling Rolex watch.
Political cartoonist Dave Brown reimagines Holbein's masterpiece, The Ambassadors, for the 21st century. We start, though, with the National Gallery's latest exhibition. The question of how to capture the play of light has long fascinated artists, and few have been as successful in the attempt as those associated with Italian divisionism. In the last decades of the 19th century, these artists experimented with painting techniques in a bid to flood their canvases with light, and the results still dazzle today. The Radical Light exhibition offers a unique chance to see a group of these luminous works in one place, and explores the equally radical political agendas that fueled their creation. Leah Caribbean spoke to curator Chris Riopel to find out more.
Divisionism is a term very much associated with this group of Italian artists at the end of the 19th century. They had decided that the great theme of modern painting would be light, and so they set themselves the problem, how do you bring light into a painting in new ways? And their answer was that you do it by dividing up colors on the canvas itself. That is to say, instead of traditionally mixing colors on your palette and then applying them to the canvas, you put pure colors onto the canvas in divided brush strokes. So you would have green next to red, next to blue.
That sounds to me a little bit like French pointillism, the technique of painting in dots of pure colour that was developed by Seurat and other artists like Signac. Are Italian divisionist painters taking inspiration from the pointillists, or are they different?
The Italian divisionists were hearing about this experimental painting going on in Paris, where painters like Seurat and Signac were painting with dots of pure colour. They had never seen any of these works. They only had descriptions of them. But they realized that rather than using dots, by using these lines or filaments of color, pure color, they could achieve some of the effects that they knew the French pointillists were achieving.
Using these sort of threads of color rather than dots or points, there's a wonderful painting by Angelo Morbelli called For 80 Cents, which shows women who are picking out the weeds in the rice fields with their ankles in the water. It seems that he, like many other Italian painters, are allying this new technique also with a deal of social comment.
There is a political dimension very strongly in divisionism, as there was in pointillism. Both in France and in Italy, the artists were hoping that their art could make a difference in society, could make lead to social transformation. There is a big difference between the two, however, in that the French painters tended to be anarchists, tended to want to see the overthrow of the traditional organization of society. In Italy, the artists who were very involved in radical politics were not anarchists, they were socialists.
This idea of that a painting technique, obviously allied with a particular type of subject matter, but that a painting technique like divisionism can somehow be an instrument for social change, that, you know, that art can emancipate people, that it can be part of a social progress. I mean, isn't that a bit nuts?
Well, when you take as your great theme in painting light, light traditionally has a great range and spectrum of meanings. It's not only about color, it's also about enlightenment, about, it implies the bringing of new knowledge to bear on situations. And so by focusing on light and how you bring it into paintings, they were also focusing on the possibility of political enlightenment at the same time. So there is, in much divisionist painting, a kind of, even in the most realistic depictions of social problems, there is kind of an allegorical dimension built into it, if you will, an aspiration to improve society by doing this.
All these ideas seem to feed into a group of artists who came to call themselves the Futurists. And I know that the exhibition ends with a fantastic group of works of the Futurists just at the moment when the Futurist Manifesto, which came out in 1909, was published. And there's one in particular that I thought we could talk about, which is this Luigi Russolo called I Lampi, which has this fantastic contrast between a great strike of lightning coming down on Milan, the newly built Milan, and the street lamps, which are glowing in the dark. It's evening time. I wondered if you could talk us through what it was for the Futurists that attracted them to Divisionism.
There's something quite fascinating in avant-garde art in Italy at this time. Whereas in France and most other places, avant-garde art was a series of radical breaks with the past, overthrowing everything that had come before. In Italy, you see a direct growth of futurism out of divisionism. The futurists always said that it was the divisionists who first showed the way to a modern art, and so they always honored that generation that had come before them, saw that the depiction of light and the depiction of social problems gave them, the futurists, a basis on which to build an even more radical and even more audacious art that broke with the conventions, that would break with the conventions of naturalistic representation.
Chris Riopelle. And if you'd like to see those extraordinary light effects for yourself, come along to the exhibition. It opens on the 18th of June and tickets are available from the gallery or online with a booking fee. And you can hear more from curator Chris Riopelle on the exhibition audio guide. The subject of our next interview is best known for his long tenure as the plain-speaking, down-to-earth frontman of Channel 4 News. Less well-known, perhaps, is that for the past 8 years, John Snow has also served as a trustee of the National Gallery. I asked him about his love affair with one particular picture when I spoke to him in the gallery.
I've come to have a closer look at a painting by the artist Garland Kallela, who's from Finland. It's called Lake Kaitila. And I've come to look at it because it's the favourite painting of one John Snow. John, what is it about this work that you like so much?
Well, I think in the end it's one of the most different pictures in the National Gallery, for a start. It stands out. It seems to have a natural affinity with Impressionism, Pointillism. But it is, in fact, I suppose you'd call it a European expressionist painting. The thing is, the more you look at it, the more you see, which, of course, is true of so many paintings. But it's about something very deep and spiritual. There's something very moody about it. And yet it's also technically very exciting. I mean, I love the very broad brushstrokes that float across in a very, very determined way to lend the picture its perspective. I think the sky is interesting in the extreme, and as is its reflection in the water. But I think above all, it is the looming presence of this island at the right-hand top end of the picture, which is both dark, mysterious, brooding, but somehow enticing too. You'd like to know what goes on there.
I think the more you look at it, the more you realise that it stands out from everything else in the Impressionist room. But you also have a very personal connection to this work, don't you?
Well, I do, because I was a trustee from 1999, the year we bought it, and a very shy one, actually. I mean, when you arrive at the National Gallery as a trustee, you feel you're the most ignorant man in the gallery, which I still remain. And I've just finished being a trustee, and I count this as being something where I really made a contribution. Because in the end, we had to decide whether to buy it or not. And, of course, there were people who really were very well equipped to give an account of the picture, and there were people who were able to make a very informed judgment about it. I was neither of those things. I merely looked at it as something, would I like to have it in the gallery? Would it enhance the gallery? Would it be something that people would enjoy? And I thought positively, absolutely. And I was the swing vote, and so I like to think that I was part of getting it. It's interesting because there are very, very few of this guy's paintings outside Finland, almost none at all. And this came up in New York, and it was a one-off chance to have it. And I believe that since we've had it, it's been a fantastically well-selling postcard. So that indicates that we got it right to some extent. If public joy at the picture is anything to test it by.
John, you're very well travelled, and you've been to some very difficult situations, so you've covered war zones. What does the gallery mean to you? Is it somewhere where you come and sort of get away from all of that and relax, or does it speak to what you do in some way?
I think you think you're coming in here to escape the world outside. And I always saw it initially as something which gave me breathing space from the world outside, from the world that I had to intersect with. But of course, the longer you spend in here, the more you find yourself reconnecting with some of the issues, particularly religion, that you thought you'd left outside.
Thanks to John Snow. And if you'd like to see Lake Kaitala for yourself, come along to the gallery. It's currently on display. Dave Brown's cartoons for the Independent newspaper have won him acclaim as a funny and incisive chronicler of British political life. Sketches in his Rogues Gallery series, published every Saturday, offer judgment on the politics of today by pastiching great paintings from the past. Over the years, he's pressed many National Gallery pictures into service, including Holbein's The Ambassadors, much loved by visitors for its mysterious image of a skull which blurs in and out of focus depending on where you stand. Cathy Fitzgerald went to meet Brown and began by asking how his version of the painting differs from Holbein's.
My version of The Ambassadors is drawn at the time of Sarkozy's visit to Britain for a state visit. So we have Gordon Brown standing in the rather fine Tudor dress, and Sarkozy on the other side, and they're leaning on the shelf, as in Holbein's version, with an array of objects between them. And as in Holbein's version, the objects really sort of tell the story. So it's all the topics they were talking about. So we have a NATO helmet, a sort of flask of rather dodgy-looking nuclear material glowing rather dangerously, and the nude photo of Carla, which was on auction in New York at the time. And on it on the corners, there's Sarkozy's hung his aviator sunglasses and his big bling Rolex watch. Sarkozy is supposedly a great fan of Thatcherism and the Anglo-Saxon way of doing things. So there's the bust of Thatcher on the bottom shelf, slightly worse for wear. The tip of the nose is broken off. And next to that, we've got the Atlas open at Afghanistan. Sarkozy had just committed troops to Afghanistan, to the war. And one of the other issues they were talking about was the European Union. And so I've made it quite literally a political football. It's a football in the blue and yellow colours of the EU flag. At the bottom, we've got this strange object, which isn't really apparent immediately what it is. And as in Holbein's, it's a skull. It's a memento mori, a reminder of death. But of course, in my version, death is Bush.
So it's George Bush at the bottom. How did you get the skull effect?
Yes, I'm sure Holbein must have used some sort of technology of his day to draw the anamorphic skull, whether it was a camera obscura or a glass cylinder or some sort of perspective drawing frame. But now, of course, I had Photoshop to do it. So I drew a little sketch in normal perspective of Bush as a skull, trying to get it as skull-like as possible, but also keep the likeness. Then scanned it in and put it in Photoshop on the computer. And using the distort tools, you could stretch it to the desired shape. And then print it out and copy that down onto the final cartoon. Because I wanted to make sure that, as in the original, you could look down the side of the picture and see the skull cut back into the proper perspective.
And what's up in the top left-hand corner? In Holbein's painting, there's a small silver crucifix that just peeps through on the top left. What have you got?
Yes, instead of the crucifix, there's half-hidden an old black-and-white photo of Blair. So it's the icon of the old religion, half-hidden behind the curtain and gathering dust.
You've based your cartoons on pictures for a number of years. What is it about paintings that draws you back as a source of pastiche?
Well, I think with very well-known pictures, it's an easy way in for the viewer. If it's something they recognise, they immediately have half an understanding of the story. You know, they have an idea what the relationship is, what's going on. And that can work for you two ways. If it's very well-known, you can take it and completely subvert it and change the meaning completely. and surprise people with something unexpected. If it's a little less well known, it can just be a way in, a helpful sort of tool, so you don't have to spend your whole time explaining what the story is.
And are there any other paintings in the National Gallery that you've used over the years? Who else have you lampooned?
Another recent cartoon was based on Henri Rousseau's Tiger, and it was at the time of the protests over China and their attitude to Tibet and, of course, the Olympics. So it's the title is the same as Rousseau's. It's Surprised Tiger Caught in a Storm. The tiger in my version is the Chinese premier, and he's surprised by the storm of outrage over Tibet. And in front of him are five skulls arranged in the to look like the rings of the Olympic logo. And the tiger's claws and fangs are rather blooded.
And who have you got in your sights next? Boris Johnson?
Yes, I imagine I'll be drawing Boris sometime fairly soon. I'm not quite sure what else. I must scour the National Gallery for blonde-headed toffs, I think, and see who I might possibly draw him as.
Cathy Fitzgerald talking to Dave Brown, whose Rogues Gallery series has recently been published as a book. And if you'd like to see Holbein's original version of The Ambassadors for yourself, without George Bush, pop along to the gallery, where it's currently on display. That's it for this episode, but we'll be back in July with more news from the National Gallery, London. Until then, goodbye.